Well, happy Wednesday, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. We are very excited to be able to share the hidden treasure of franchise resales with you. So please open your chat box. Feel free to enter in any questions throughout the presentation. We'll make sure we cover everything at the end. And so without further delay, I want to introduce Tom Spadia of Spadia Liana Franchise Attorneys. Thank you, Tom, for being here.
Chelsea, thank you for organizing this. Appreciate everybody also who has signed up for this and those of you that might watch this as we post this recording. This is a topic that I've talked about often, both, as an attorney over the last dozen or so years. And also, when I was a franchise broker and I was in charge of resales, and then I worked for some franchisors. And I always felt that this is something that is a topic that can fall through the cracks, right? People always think about new franchises, management teams rate themselves. And, resales is something that I just have always believed was a real opportunity for franchisors. So as we get into this, and as I, figure out my technology here, there we go. Technically not enabled sometimes. So here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, who's in charge of resales. And I think that's probably one of the biggest areas of opportunity for especially emerging brands to really identify and understand that franchise resales are different than the rest. And then we're going to talk about the pop that you get. New owner, new energy. Why a franchise resales? Remember, you're a franchisor. You're in the royalty game. And, you're in the royalty game and you're in the game of having happy franchisees that are really into your system. And this is one way to do that. And then we're going to talk about the life cycle of a small business and why resales are just normal and you should be prepared for them. And you should be aware of that so you can be coaching and teaching your franchisees of when they need to be thinking about a resale. And then we're just going to talk about the ROI. And yes, Rick, this is being recorded for later viewing and we'll have that posted. So jumping into it, who's in charge of resales, right? This is, I guess I'm dating myself about when my kids were young and we used to watch Madagascar. So I found this little picture, which is really, really clears it up, right? Or shows exactly the state of franchise resales. So when I was in franchise development and the head of franchise sales, it's funny, my development team really didn't like dealing with resales because from our management team, which at the time, I think incorrectly, compensated them less in terms of their commission. And you see that all the time, that a lot of franchise development folks are compensated on new deals because they're generating a much larger franchise fee for the franchisor versus, half or less in terms of what a transfer fee is going to be. And it counts, right? Everybody's bragging when they go to IFA, hey, I went from 80 units to 90 units last year. Well, if I did a resale, that doesn't really move the needle on the units open. So a lot of people, and especially I know seeing the name, there's a bunch of CEOs and founders on this call, you have to be disciplined enough to know that there are more than one ways to judge whether or not you have a win. And so franchise sales sometimes has a disincentive to doing resales because they don't get compensated. And they say, I get paid less and I do triple the amount of work because a resale is a lot more work. It's not just signing the franchise agreement and you're off. You might have a lease to transfer. You might have, you have a buyer to deal with. You have an asset purchase agreement. You have this rights of first refusal. There's a lot of moving parts to resales that we'll touch on. And so operations, operations looks at it, franchisee raises their hand. Hey, I think I want to sell. Oh, well, my job is to coach you and teach you and make sure you're following brand standards. Resales, that's kind of outside the envelope, but they're an existing franchisee. So operations says existing franchisee that, development says existing franchisees, that's operations problems. Operation says, oh, wait, this is a franchise sale. That's development. So they get lost in the shuffle. And legal, from a standpoint, especially larger brands that have legal, legal is in charge of it, yes, in terms of shuffling the paperwork. But are you really taking a proactive approach to find the right buyer to make sure this gets transitioned? So, it's the old adage, no one's in charge. It has to be intentionally assigned. So you know who's ultimately in charge of resales? the CEO, the president, the founder, the person in charge of the brand, and they need to delegate that to a human being. One person has to know, oh, I own resales, and come up with metrics and come up with ways of saying, look, you know, our system is going to go through so many resales, and we want you to really, really find the right partners. Find maybe a national business broker. There's tons. And by the way, send me a note offline or to our client relations team if you need introductions to people who are in this, because there are lots of folks out there, third-party vendors, that franchisors sometimes think, oh, I don't want to deal with that. It's like a resale. I don't want to introduce them to the right people. I don't want to be responsible for that. Forget it. You're responsible for growing your royalties and having happy franchisees. So if no one's in charge, you know, or if everyone's in charge, no one's in charge. And if no one's been assigned to it, then no one's going to care about it. So you really have to take an account. If you're on this call and you're a franchisor, and you point to the one person who's in charge of resales, that's your biggest area of opportunity by putting someone in charge. And it doesn't necessarily have to be franchise development. It doesn't necessarily have to be someone in operations. It could be, we had the person in charge when we kind of re-engineered this and fixed it, is we had the same person that was in charge of the same person who was our qualifier. You know, she was super organized. She was great, smart. She wasn't quite like a salesperson pushing people into, you know, moving, which is, you know, a different mindset. She was sort of a blend between operations. It was a great role because the job was, oh, you're selling. Okay, let me introduce you to this vendor to list it. Let me make sure this is, make sure you know, Mr. Franchisee, Mrs. Franchisee, what you need to do next. We need your asset purchase agreement. We need your right of first refusal, which, by the way, the right of first refusal in most of your franchise agreements is in there, not necessarily just so that you can buy it, it's, or acquire it, which you may, but most times you don't pull the trigger on that. It's in there to show you the deal. So you know, because remember, you know, the new franchisee is coming in there, the old franchisee is exiting, and yes, you want to help them and let them monetize their investment and let them leave super happy with and validating. But you also have to be super conscious that the new person coming in, which is a good segue for this, the new person coming in is properly capitalized. You have to be careful. You can't really interfere or reject a resale just because of the price. But as a franchisor, you have an obligation that the new owner is coming in with realistic expectations. And, you know, there's no earnings claims issues or any of that because it's a resale. So you're looking at the numbers. You want to make sure they're getting truthful numbers. You want to make sure they're getting a realistic assessment of what they're stepping into. I have seen sometimes what happens, and this is more just a war story, and take it for what it's worth. I don't really necessarily have a quick solution except transparency, that you see someone comes in as a franchise and they crush it and they maximize it. And they're in the, you know, top 20% of all your franchisees, and they're making a lot of money, but they're a really talented franchisee. There's a lot of risk associated with that for a franchisor. Because what happens is, let's just, you know, using round numbers, they started the business for a couple hundred grand. They built it up to $1 million, $1.5 million in revenue. It's super profitable. They sell the business for $1.2 million. Now, the cash flow burden is on the new franchisee. They don't really have a lot of room for error. So believe it or not, there's more risk for you as a franchisor on a very high dollar resale than there is on a low dollar one. Like I said, you can't kill the deal. You can't discourage it, but you just have to be involved and you have to have a seat at that table to make sure that the expectations are met. Now, on the flip side, the opportunity, which most of them are, is you get resales of folks who are struggling. So maybe they're in the bottom third and they're just not quite there. Now you get someone who comes in new, and this is my little picture on here. It's a good student, right? It's your best franchisee. Recalibrate. Someone's run this business. They've been in this business for 6-7 years. They're tired. They're like, I don't want to wake up and make the donuts anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm just burned out. It's totally appropriate. It's okay. It's much better, you know. And if they bought in 6 or 7 years ago, your business model has probably adjusted and tweaked and moved with the times. And they're still thinking like, well, I like it when it was the OG, the original gang, when we were just like 10 franchisees and I could text the owner and you're sort of like, hey, we're at 50 units now. You know, we're a different brand. We're professionalized. You got to get on Facebook. You got to place these ads and they're resisting at every turn. And so they sell. Now you get a new owner, new energy. They're coming in. So you should be aware of that. Those of you, you know, clients on this call know that I've spoken to you the way my first conversation when someone is non-compliant. You have a franchisee that's not compliant. They're not putting in the marketing materials. They're not, you know, they're not logging the stuff into the CRM. They're not showing up at meetings. I cut right to the chase. My first question is, do you want to be in this system? And there's nothing wrong if you want to be out. You're not insulting me. You're not, you know, you're not upsetting me. If this is not where you want to be, let's figure out a path for you to capture. Because if you keep going down this path of non-compliance, as you were on my last webinar, remember this, you know, conversation. If you keep going down this path of non-compliance, you're going to continue to erode the value that you have. And maybe you're not going to come out whole, but it's going to get worse for you. Because as you move away from the system standards, the value of your business is going to continue to drop. So let's sell. One of two things happens. They wake up and they say, "Ooh, I better get involved. I don't want to sell." Or, which is the more likely, they say, "You know what? We appreciate that. I think it's time to move on." And then what happens? They sell it to someone who comes in. And that person is reading your new FDD, your new branding material, talking to new franchisees. And what do they see? They don't see problems. They see a franchise that's in the bottom performance, and they see all this other good stuff, and they see all the things the franchisee's not doing. And they come in, they're properly capitalized, they have realistic expectations, and they're buying the business today, the system today. You get a fresh start and they get a fresh start. And honestly, the exiting owner gets out with some degree of dignity and not a fight. So it's really a triple win for everybody. And so that is why you can't be passive about this. That's why I call this hidden treasure. You have, you know, if you're a system of 50 units, there's probably five franchisees that ought to sell. Who are your bottom performers? They ought to sell. Get in there, have a nice adult conversation with them, a coaching. At some point, you had a great relationship, right? At some point, they came into this business. They were excited about it. You were excited about them. And it's tarnished off. It, you know, the patina there is no longer cute, but it's time to move on. It's okay. This is an opportunity for you to help them and really help yourself. So, you know, how do you find these new buyers, right? To some degree, the same way you find existing, you know, owners, but the reality is the buyer, and I, you know, prior to being an attorney, I was a franchise broker and I was a business broker. And I will tell you, the profile of those buyers is very different. You know, the person who wants to buy new is kind of thinking they're getting a deal, ground floor, they're coming in. The person who is buying an existing location, sometimes a little more risk averse, they want to see more numbers. They want to kind of get in there and sort of take something and just improve it. It's a different buyer. So you will get leads from new locations. And, you know, you have to set up your compensation in your system internally that you don't say, we lost that great lead to this resale. Don't think like that. It's good for you. You're always going to have inventory. You need to maximize every single location if you want to maximize the value of your system. So you're not losing a lead. In fact, it's better. You're getting them into the system with a chance to have serious success, and maybe they can start adding to their portfolio and also do new locations so you can get best, you know, best of both worlds, but don't push them. So you're not losing leads, which a lot of salespeople think. So it's my advice, recalibrate how you compensate people. Business brokers, they're not franchise brokers, they're business. Now, some franchise brokers are business brokers and vice versa, but usually they go down one path where they get better at it. So, you know, be creative about it. Have a program, have a relationship. I mean, I can think of two or three national brands that would love to talk to you and say, hey, and we know them, we're friends with them. We see these deals, you know, we process the transfer agreement. So we know who's doing what. Have that conversation. Have a proactive plan to say, hey, who do I call? How do I do this? What's your process? What do you charge? How do you go through this? Really understand it so that you can then coach it and teach it And when the franchisees raise their hand, or when you have that coaching call, you then have a process and you have a path, and you're not leaving it to chance. You know, I think it's a mistake for a franchisor to say, call me when you have a buyer and you have a deal under development. I think that's just leaving way too much to chance. You know, take control of it. You have more visibility on this. And existing franchisees, that's a slam dunk. Usually it's a fair price. Most franchise systems, once they kind of start maturing, the market becomes known. Multiple of earnings, you know, some multiple of sales, maybe it's a recurring income business, but there's that's going to be your fairest price, because you have a knowledgeable seller and you have a knowledgeable buyer. So, you know, getting back to my comment earlier, that there's risk if people overpay, because then they have a whole new loan and they're going to be dissatisfied, even if they're running a system. You know, if you're at the top of the system, there's a limit to that growth. So you have that risk. So selling to existing franchisees is the best. I probably should flip that and make that one first. I'll do that if I ever redo this. I think existing franchisees are your best opportunity. You know, you sell to an existing franchisee, everybody knows, they're trained, they're going to take that over and they're going to run. Now, you got to make sure that they're ready to grow. You got to make sure that they're not buying it just because of scarcity, because they're, oh, someone else is going to buy it and be my neighbor. You want to make sure they're buying it for the right reason. They have a plan. You have a multi-unit, you know, coaching plan. You know, teaching a franchisee to run one location is different than having a multi-unit plan. So you got to make sure you're ready for them. International visa applicants is just another way to think creative. Sometimes people who are coming in with a visa, it's a lot harder for them to buy a brand new, call it a greenfield, and get the store open and move it forward. Whereas they can come in to an existing business right off the bat, supporting their family from day one. That's all different. And there are people who specialize in that. So have a plan, have a plan, have a focus, and take ownership of that process for your franchisees to sell. And this gets back to what I was talking about before. It's agnostic. It's not good. It's not bad. People sell. An average business owner, I remember reading this statistic many years ago before I did this, I went and kind of looked it up. Average business is owned for 7 to 10 years. And just intuitively, you kind of know that, right? Like, you just think about it. So you take the mean of that at 8.5, you know, if you have 100 locations, you're going to do 8.5 resales, or eight, however you do that, you divide it by 8.5. I did the wrong math there. I'm a lawyer, not a math, but you get what my point is. You're going to have so many resales every year. So knowing that, you can budget that, and don't just think about, when you budget it, don't just think about the transfer fee. You have to think about the potential bump in loyalty, and you have to think about the bump to your average unit volumes. You know, higher AUV drives your entire system. So you should know, oh, you know what, this year, I bet you were going to have 3 or 4 resales. Okay, maybe it's not a full-time job. I mean, if you have 40 units and you have a bunch that are coming up for, you know, renewal, and you want to get ahead of it, it also avoids that problem of people wanting to sell and then it's de-identified and now, you know, someone went independent because you didn't give the value proposition. That's a whole nother problem that probably, you know, would be another webinar. And we've had that, right? Someone sells and then, you know, you get into this weird area of enforcing a non-compete, but you don't really have a relationship with the person who was the buyer. They just bought the assets, even though they couldn't really buy the customer base. Okay, you can open across the street, but it's a nightmare. So if someone's already thinking like that, they're probably not engaged in your system and you've lost them. So get ahead of them and grab it on before they do it. And coach your franchisees. I would put that, honestly, put a slide like this and put these statistics in your training. Average business is owned for 7 to 10 years. You're gonna go through a life cycle. You might sell in 5, you might sell in 15, but start with the end in mind. You know, my clients know, I harp on that all the time. About starting with the end in mind. Same goes for a franchisee, right? Why did they buy it? Is this a lifestyle play? Is it a cash flow play? Do they want to do other franchises in the future? Do they want to own multiple things? Your job as a franchisor is not just to teach them how to do your underlying business. It's to teach them how to be a business owner. And part of teaching someone and coaching someone on how to be a business owner, go all the way through, right? You got to get them across home plate. Don't teach them just to hit a single, a double, or a triple. Teach them to hit a home run. Get them all the way around the plate. Get them all the way around the base pass. And this is part of it. And if you botch this, you're hurt or ignore it, you're not giving full service and satisfaction. So one, you have kind of this obligation to see it through. But two, it's something that exists and it happens. That's why I say it's hidden treasure. And it's ignored. And it's a huge opportunity to jump. And that comes to the ROI, right? I mean, it's hidden treasure. You know, the ROI of this, you're going to increase royalties. I remember we had a statistic when I was working at a franchisor and we tracked it, and it was something like a 15% bump in revenue in the first year of a resale. And I'm sure those of you who have done resales are not surprised by that number at all. So just imagine that you're all of a sudden taking a couple of units and you're getting, you know, think of what your marketing team does to move to what they would have to do and how much money you would have to spend to move the needle 15% year over year in sales. But it's obvious, right? They're going to come in, they're going to spend money. So you're going to increase your royalties. That alone is going to pay for it and drive everything. And what that's going to do, it's going to give you higher average unit volumes, which drives franchise sales. It drives your business value as a franchisor, some multiple of your royalties. So that 15% is real money to you in terms of enterprise value. Plus you have better value validation. So now prospective franchisee is working through item 20 and they're picking up and they're calling they're calling franchisees. And instead of talking to the burned out franchisee who's, you know, got a year left on their franchise agreement and is thinking of just closing their doors because they've never gotten any love from the franchisor, to the new franchisee who's super excited and says, you know, I just went through the training program. This is awesome. I'm ready to go. My sales went up 15% last year. That's going to sell the next franchise. And plus you have improved compliance because of all these things. It's like a triple threat, good for everybody. The new franchisee doesn't know any better. So over those last 7 to 10 years, you have a lot more higher expectations, or you should, of what you want your franchisees to do on a day-to-day basis. And your new franchisees, they only know what you teach them in the beginning. And so that kind of burns off. So as your business grows, it's sometimes a lot harder for these, you know, original, the OG guys can be a little bit difficult, and you know that. And so if you can kind of gracefully move on and get a new generation of people. And, you know, they might, the compliance also comes from the respect. So if you sign someone up when you had 10 units and you kind of knew what you were doing, and now you have 50 to 75 or 100 units and you're buttoned up and you have, you know, more professional team members in there, you are going to get a different level of respect and compliance and mind share, and you're viewed differently than the folks who came in the beginning who are still thinking of you with your training wheels on. And so that's going to just improve compliance. So it's really a better way in a complete circle. I'm going to go to questions in a second here. And I actually have one coming in here related to resales. Have we seen any statistics on the success of franchise business person? That's a great question. So the question is, have we seen any statistics? So no formal statistics, but I can tell war stories on it. On the success of a franchise resale versus an independent resale. And I would say that one of the big advantages, one of the selling points that I would give on a franchise resale is that the training is really done professionally by the franchisor who has a whole business model set up around franchises. So in terms of the independent, because when you typically do an independent resale, let's say you sell a coffee shop that's not associated, you're going to build into the asset purchase agreement, oh, they're going to be around for 3 months for training. They're going to teach me. But this is a person who ran a coffee shop, or maybe it's more complex. Maybe it was an engineering firm. Maybe it was a landscaping firm. Oh, I'll introduce you to all the clients and teach you the business. But this is an owner who's run a landscaping firm for the last 10 years. they have no idea how to train someone. They just have managers. And so with a franchise resale, the training is going to be at a much higher level because you're going to train them. You're used to training people. You know how to train people who come on board. So that is, so there's much better. And then the another question is franchise resales versus the success of franchise resales versus startup. I don't know the statistics there, but I would suspect highly that you're going to have a much higher success rate as a franchise resale. There's a lot less unknowns. You know, you may not have the same level of ROI as a franchisee who's buying a resale because you're paying for the cash flow, maybe three times multiple. Whereas if you start up new and you really start strong and you follow everything, you might get rewarded more, but you have more risk. So I would dare say that that a franchise resale, it actually goes back to the heart of my original piece. And I'll go here to the official questions page. So feel free, by the way, to jump in the chat. I see a couple questions coming through, which is great. It goes to the heart of the buyer thing where I was mentioning that a buyer who is interested in a franchise resale versus a new franchise is probably going to be a little bit more risk averse. They're going to have a little bit of a higher level of thinking, this is a risky business. So they might be more comfortable with a resale because they're getting tax returns, they're getting a known entity. They're kind of stepping into something that's already moving. So I would suspect that a franchise resale has a much higher success rate than a startup franchise. So that's, you know, one selling point. Another question. Okay, talking about that 15% boost in sales. Yeah, I mean, that's great. So basically, I appreciate that, Mr. Porterfield. Those of you who know Tom Porterfield, my friend, basically commented to sort of, because he's more of a math guy than I am. He's equating that's, you know, a 0.75 to 1% increase in royalties. You're right, which without much work. Franchise resales are hidden treasure. I'm telling you, there's a huge ROI with effort. And so if you're not doing anything, if you're just like, I don't know, that's up to them. They're independent business owners, let them sell. By really focusing on this and thinking about it and tracking it and measuring it, you know, I actually spoke on a couple of panels. I haven't for years. It was years ago with a couple franchisors when we represented franchisees. And I did a franchise retirement, but it was hush hush and it was kind of taboo. It was like, oh, I don't want to talk about resales. I think you should. There's nothing wrong with having that conversation. And so at your annual meeting, you know, bring in people to have a conversation about exit strategies. Another question. What about a franchisee that's a poor performer, not necessarily non-compliant? How much pressure you can put on them? So this comes down to being a coach and not a, you know, benevolent dictator. You're a coach. You can't force them to sell. You don't want to be sending letters from your law firm, beating them up. I demand you sell if they're not in default. But you want to coach them. You want to have the conversation. You want to literally say, are you not happy? Should we break up? Is it time? It's a relationship. For some reason, you're not happy. Why do I think you're not happy? Because you're not putting in your effort. You have a duty of a franchisor to call out a franchisee who is not performing up to their potential. And if they don't have the energy, effort, or capital to put in the time to be successful, you're damn well right you ought to call them out on it. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't be shy about that. Don't be shy about telling them you're not pulling your weight. Look at your metrics. You know, if you have good metrics and you can say, look where you stand compared to the rest of the system. Stop making excuses. If you're not going to do it, why don't you sell out? So yeah, I think you're not telling they have to sell, but you're strongly insisting that they sell to get them. So, you know, what are some ways to influence or remove underperforming or non-compliant franchisees outside of the default? Well, I mean, this is the way to remove non-performing franchisees is you get them to sell. And you know what? If you're under 100 units, that phone call ought to come from the CEO. Pick up the phone and say, hey, you know what, Jim? You know what, Sally? Remember when you joined this franchise system and you were super excited and you showed up at every meeting? You don't come anymore. You're at the bottom of the list. You're not even answering. You're not even filling this up. Look at your performance scores. Did something change in your life? It's okay. Let me help you before this thing deteriorates and coach them out of the market. That is really, really the key. So what's the risk of putting the seller with a couple of franchisees you might like to see have the universes let them go to the entire market? Look, I think that's fine. I think you can coordinate it before they're officially selling. This is part of that coaching, right? As you start saying, hey, do you want to sell? Maybe you can do a quick deal. You don't have to go through a business broker. You don't have to go through, and by the way, I think it's good sometimes to have a broker because you can get a wider net. But for you to coordinate it, you know, you say, here's your neighbor. They're ready to go. I think coordinating that sale is totally appropriate. You can't really stop it, but you also can stop. So you can't necessarily, you'd be hard pressed to kill a sale based on price to an outside franchisee without risk there. But you can definitely stop an internal sale by telling an existing franchisee, I don't think you're ready. You know, I know you and you're not ready to buy this store. You're not approved for new stores. You completely say that. In fact, you ought to. What do I do for franchisees? Understand resales do not pay a franchise fee. You're losing out on the seller's responsibility for the transfer fee. So in most franchise agreements, and certainly in ours, there's a transfer fee. In the older agreements, you know, or some agreements, it's like 50% of the then current franchise fee. Sometimes they're capped. Sometimes they might have gotten a special deal. I would honestly, and not to get on this call and cost you money, because in the long term, it makes you money. If you have a struggling franchisee who's not compliant and not listening to you, get a release and waive the transfer fee. Get that new person in there, because absolutely that's a challenge. They have, by the time they pay your transfer fee, which is a totally legitimate fee, because you actually are incurring costs. You have to train the new person. You know, they have a better argument on what are you doing for the renewal fee? Not much, but it's part of the deal. But a transfer fee, you are incurring costs. You have to train them. So maybe you cut it down. Maybe you negotiate it. But between paying the broker fee and the commission and the lead, but you know, broker fees, and maybe I'm biased because I have a lot of friends who are brokers and I believe in that, resale brokers, because you're getting more buyers. It's like for sale by owner. You know, if you sell your house for sale by owner, you're probably going to not get as many buyers and you're not going to market it properly. And the buyer is going to know you're not paying a commission. So they're going to offer you less money. So I believe that the broker fees, certainly for resales, well exceed whatever that, you know, 10% fee is, well exceed the value that the franchisee, the exiting franchisee is going to get. But it's real. You know, you're going to get pushback, but that's, you know, it's part of the deal. So if it's a struggling franchisee, I would consider waiving or adjusting. Another really good question here. What about the number one franchisee who gets an offer out of the blue and the offer is too good to be true? Anything the franchisor needs to watch out for? Well, you have to make sure that this goes to that one risk. There is risk associated there. I don't know that you can really kill the deal or stop it, but I think you have to be conscious of the fact that you may have a struggling franchisee, because you have your number one franchisee because of their personality, their best salesperson in the world. And the new person comes in and it's a financial play based on a spreadsheet. They're not going to put the same energy into there. So I think you need to scare the hell out of the buyer to let them know why that franchisee was successful. Let them do due diligence. Let them understand, because once again, they're now going to be paying a big number and have it. And if they're borrowing that money, they have a huge nut to cover. And can you get that cash flow coverage? So I think you just have to, you can't unreasonably deny it. And that's the next question. You can't really unreasonably deny a buyer of a resale. I mean, it's true. It's kind of part of the bargain. It's not necessarily written in stone. In your franchise agreement, it says for whatever reason, you can say no to them. But there have been litigation and franchisors have come out on the bad side of this if they unreasonably deny someone selling. So you have to go, you know, talk to us, by the way, if you're a client of the firm on something, if you're nervous about that, I can talk you through that. There's ways to handle it. The ways to handle it is transparency. So you're not denying it, but you're making sure that that new franchisee is coming in with eyes wide open. They know everything about the system, good, the bad, and the ugly. And so if they still buy it, you know, that's a hedge, because now at least you have this conversation with the buyer to say, hey, we had this conversation. We walked through all these points and look what you're not following. So that's good. Great question. Great questions, guys. Next question. Do you see new franchisees who have entered the system get discouraged from moving forward by talking to a current owner about a resale? Yes. I mean, there's always a risk there, but that's why you got to manage it, right? So one of the challenges is that I see that happening. And what are the risks of introducing a multi-unit owner who's in development phase for the first unit to a disgruntled franchisee in their market for potential resale? You know what? I would do that. If you have someone, they have a three-store development deal, I would consider that them checking the box on a development. The town isn't going away, but a bad franchisee hurts you in way more ways than just your royalties. So I don't think that's a risk. I think that's an opportunity. That's my main theme here, guys. Don't think about resales as a risk or as a problem. Think of them as a normal course of work and an opportunity. So I would flip it around and I would take a multi-unit owner who has a development schedule and they're supposed to open so many units. And I would say, you know what we can do? Look at Jane down the street. She's really struggling. Look at Joe across town. He's really struggling. He kind of wants to get out. I'll tell you what, you take over that and you know, you paid me half the franchise fee. We'll consider it even. That's forethought. That's what your job is as a franchisor to be thinking down the road. So I think that's a better one. And regarding the franchisees who've entered the system getting discouraged by, you know, talking to a current owner about a resale, no, it's coaching. So if in your training, you talked about the life cycle, you talked about the fact that people will sell eventually, start with the end in mind. It's why you need to have clean books. It's why you need to be organized. It's why you have to be, you know, professional. It's why you need to be compliant. It's why you need to be in the top, you know, half or third of system-wide sales, because that's going to drive higher valuations. It's all of these reasons. If you have that conversation, then they know, oh, resales are, they're kind of part of the system. They're part of business ownership. They are, by the way, right? They are part of it. And so just be truthful with them. And I think that will hedge against them, you know, getting discouraged. Another question here. Oh, we're loaded up here today. Does the franchisor have concerns in training new owners prior to the hard close of a deal, both from sharing the model prior to them owning the business? Well, so the question is, does the franchisor have concerns about training new owners prior to the hard close? So, you know, there's ways to do that, though. There are systems, you can kind of go into the business if they end up backing out, and you can get people, A, to sign an NDA. You can also get them to close on the deal. You know, you do the training first. You get them to kind of sign a franchise agreement that they'll get back. So there are ways to handle that from a legal standpoint. And, you know, after the FA is signed, but before they legally own the business. But if they've signed the franchise agreement after they've signed the franchise, I mean, if they train them after you've signed the franchise agreement, you have that intellectual property protection to avoid them from kind of going out. And is there a risk? So hopefully I answered that question there. But you do have to be conscious of that. But, you know, the reality is, you know, it's hard. I mean, your information is out there. You have to be realistic about that. Don't train people and give them your secret sauce until they've signed a franchise agreement. And then you can deal with that on a case-by-case basis. Is there a risk to have a buyer talk to another franchisee who bought a resale to share an APA as a template? You know, I don't know if there's a risk of that. It might be a little bit private. The person probably shouldn't be sharing the APA because that's kind of an agreement between the two of them. But you should, and look, we don't do that. We represent franchisees, but I can give you, you should coordinate that. They should, the business broker, they should have a resale. They should hire an attorney to do that because you want to get them off the leash. You want to get them a proper APA. You know, it's the same thing of people who, you know, do their own franchise agreements or their FTDs. Like, you shouldn't be selling or buying a business without a small business attorney taking a look at, you know, taking a look at the asset purchase agreement. That's just not some form document. Like, if they don't understand that, that's a problem. And you don't want your buyer to be taking shortcuts and educated. So really strongly encourage them. Like, hey, do you have a lawyer? Do you have a lawyer involved? Let's get this thing through. So that's it. Yeah, so, you know, there's another question here. It's a good one about the exact situation, and that's a good one. Thank you, Dan. Good broker, Dan Durney, my buddy. Asking a question in the exact situation of franchise agreement. You know, you sign a franchise agreement and you're awaiting state licensure to close. That happens a lot in liquor licenses. It'll happen a lot in medical things. So you just have to custom design, which is, by the way, it's a lot better to sort of design what the game's going to look like before you start playing the game. So break it out. If you have licensing and you have these kind of issues, there are ways to do that. You can get, you know, you can go through what these processes are so you can start training and you can start onboarding. But remember, they have to sign the franchise agreement, and that kind of locks them up and gets them involved. And every case is going to be different. So certainly every piece is going to be a little bit different. I think the real takeaway is to design a process that flows for your system. And so that you are very intentional about a resale. This is what you do. These are the steps. You know, you list your business, you talk to the franchisees, your buyer has to go through training. No surprises, right? Transparency. Transparency always works. You know, you have to give us a copy of the signed asset purchase agreement, not a template at asset purchase agreement. I want a signed asset purchase agreement. We'll issue you a letter. You have an internal process. Here's your letter that says, okay, you know, we're forgoing our right of first refusal. These are the documents that you guys are going to have to sign. You know, you package it all up so everybody knows this is what the path is. This is how long it takes. We should coach on that. And I think if you do that and you take this intentional approach, the details will start to work out. Obviously, like I said, if you're a client, talk to us. We can walk you through those details. And you, because we have these, you know, processes, we have these templates. In fact, if anybody, you know, reach out to me, I can help with some of this stuff. I can send you that article that I wrote that is some of the stuff in even more detail. So, you know, send me an email, send Chelsea an email, and we can get you that stuff. I'd be happy to. And we have all the process broken down in our field guide. So I think the real key takeaway, and we started with those first questions, was you have a real, this is hidden treasure. There's a huge ROI from not a lot of effort. There's a lot of effort, I guess, in the beginning and setting all of this stuff up and getting everything ready. But once you get it set up properly, it becomes auto. So put someone in charge. Those of you know, I'm obsessive about that, right? If everyone's in charge, no one's in charge. We probably have a few FDD heroes. We make sure you put someone in charge of writing your FDD. Same thing, put someone in charge. Someone's in charge of resales. It's their job. They're the go-to person. Operation says this person wants to sell. Okay, you know, call Heather. She's in charge of resales. Franchise sales says, oh, this is a better resale buyer. Here's my listing. We meet about it once a month, one every 2 weeks. We have so many systems. We go through the existing franchisees. We have a process and we have a human. That human talks to brokers and says, hey, I have some relationships. You guys want to do a deal for me? Maybe, you know, you negotiate a certain deal for your franchisees. I'll make introductions. Every person who does resales in terms of nationally brokers, they all want to talk to you if you have resales because it's like a slam dunk listing. So, you know, put someone in charge, understand what the process is, have it really buttoned down and treat it as an opportunity, not as a crisis, and be proactive and start from your initial training, put something in there about resales, have the conversation. Don't be afraid of it. You know, we're all adults here. Have the conversation. It's time to move on. And that is how I would really approach it. And I think you're really going to go and you're really going to see, you know, you're really going to see an increase. And at the end of the day, it's building value. It's getting the right franchisees, making your ecosystem happier. So thank you very much. Anybody have further questions? I mean, this is like the most amount of questions we've had. So I either did like a really terrible job of answering the questions throughout my presentation, or I elicited enough conversation that people got excited about. So thank you guys. Really appreciate everybody dedicating the time, and reach out to me if you have any questions for Chelsea.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. We'll hope to see you at the next one. Take care. Thank you, Tom.